Welcome to the Strategy and Leadership Podcast, the podcast that brings you practical advice, lessons, and stories from senior leaders and thought leaders from around the world. The Strategy and Leadership Podcast is brought to you by SME Strategy, working with organizations around the world to create and implement their strategic plans. To learn more, visit smestrategy.net. And now, your host, Anthony Taylor.
Hey there, folks. Thanks so much for joining us on today's episode of the Strategy and Leadership Podcast. My name is Anthony Taylor, and I'm your host. And today, I am super grateful to be joined by Peter Docker, who is the author of Lead from the Jump Seat. He's a speaker, teacher, author. He's done so many cool things. You know, you might not know it. He probably flew over your head at one point and is probably responsible for so many things you might not be aware of. But Peter, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us. How are you doing today?
Thank you, Anthony. It's wonderful to join you. I'm exceptionally well, thank you. Delighted to be here.
Awesome. I love that. Well, why don't you tell, I gave you a little bit of a weird intro as I tend to do, but can you give people a little bit more color into what you do now and really the career of amazing things that you've done that have got you up until this point?
Absolutely. So I've been hugely fortunate in my 58, almost 59 years, Anthony. I started off in the Royal Air Force. I joined as a pilot. Spent 25 years in service, became a senior officer, led people during the Iraq War, which was a big learning experience for me, taught at the British Defence College on leadership, negotiated with Russia when the Berlin Wall came down, with the US State Department on export licensing. Oh, heavens, what else? Ran $20 billion programs. And then I left the Air Force after 25 years, and I worked in consulting in oil and gas, construction, mining, high-risk environments. And I've been fortunate to spend time with leadership teams, well, in 93 countries around the world and growing. And it's a joy just to share what I've learned and learn to as I get along.
I love that. As you've spoken to all these different leadership groups, which I imagine like big, small, medium, tall organizations, what are some of the biggest challenges that you see, both that you see and that you solve for these people?
Well, for the past, about 8 years, I worked alongside Simon Sinek and co-authored the book Find Your Why, which many people have heard of. So quite often I was helping companies, organizations discover their purpose and where they were headed. And that's, if you like, the context that gives meaning to what we do. And I think one of the challenges is that we get focused so much on the nuts and bolts of what we're doing, the content, if you like, that we forget about the context. And once we lose that context, then things can start to go awry. You know, it's like a jigsaw puzzle where you have those hundreds of pieces of puzzle on the table, but they only take on meaning when you see the picture on the box. So often I've been helping organizations get clear on that picture on the box and then dig deeper and empower their people to lead. One of the challenges I think is quite common across many organizations is at an individual level. You know, we join a company because the skill set we have. Yeah, perhaps we studied computer programming, so we join as a computer programmer. And if we're good at it, we get promoted. But then we get to the stage where we're no longer doing the programming. We're taking care of the people who are doing the programming. But very few people prepare us for that transition. And that's where things start to break down. So what I focus on actually is helping people at all levels to take on that role and to lead when they don't know the answer. And for that to become a strength rather than a perceived weakness. And in the process, they lift their people up, who then can go on to lead themselves and carry forward those things which we feel are really important to us.
Absolutely. I get that. That's one of the big challenges I see, is that all of these people are technically good and have been put in leadership positions, but with no training. And they're like, yeah, you must be good at this because you're good at this, which isn't always the case. But I'll ask you a little bit about that after. One of the things that you shared about, like, the clarity of purpose, the importance of purpose, and not getting too far into the nuts and bolts. So when we talked about today, when we started talking today, you mentioned one time you were flying into the Victoria Airport, full of fog, shout out to Bob Henderson. And if we tie those two moments again, what happens when you're flying in a troublesome environment and things are not like standard, and you get too focused on the nuts and bolts. Do you get what I'm kind of trying to drive you here? Like the bigger picture versus procedures?
Yeah. Well, let's dive into that, Anthony, because for me, the flight deck of a large passenger aircraft is like the microcosm, like a microcosm of leadership. And I've seen some great leadership and actually some not such good leadership. And well, actually, I'll share this story because it's the story which gave me the title of a book, Leading from the Jump Seat. You know, it goes back some years now when I was a senior pilot and I was checking other pilots. And we'd just got towards the end of training this guy, Callum, who'd been a first officer, a co-pilot for some years and was just transitioning over to become a captain. And he'd done his 6 months of main training and I was his final check. And I was just checking him to sign him up. And we flew from London over to Washington Dulles and then on to San Francisco. And San Fran is a very busy airport. We landed. Callum had done a great job. I turned to him and said, Callum, brilliant. I'm signing you up now. You're fully certified as a captain. We're stopping here the night. Tomorrow, I'm going to be down the back with the other passengers. You've got a regular crew. Just fly us back to the East Coast. And that was a great moment. Fantastic. I'd handed over to him. The following morning, Callum came to me and said, look, it's very busy here during rush hour departing this airport, San Fran, and we don't operate there very often. He said, can you come and sit on the jump seat to act as an extra pair of eyes for safety reasons, to look out for other aircraft as we taxi out and find our way to the runway? I said, yeah, of course, Captain, no problem at all. So that's what I did. Now, the jump seat is a third seat on the flight deck of large aircrafts, immediately behind the captain and co-pilot. You can reach out and touch them, you know, you're that close, but you do have a good view of what's going on outside. So that's where I strapped myself in and we taxied out. And finally, it was our turn to take off. And we thundered down the runway and we got airborne and we were only about 300 or 400 feet off the ground when we had an emergency. Now, what I chose to do in the next 2 seconds would dictate whether I and the 140 other people on board would survive or not. What I did actually was absolutely nothing. I sat there quite calmly with my hands in my lap and just allowed Callum to do his job. Now, this is because, you know, we'd trained Callum, we'd lifted him up to take on that role. For me to intervene in any way would kind of negate the clearance I'd given him, the certification I'd given him the day before. And in that moment, I didn't need to lead. I needed to become a great follower. And for Callum to feel that I had his back, and that would allow him to get on and be who he needed to be to get us out of that situation, which, you know, I'm standing here talking to you now. So clearly he did. But this gave me the notion of leaning from the jump seat, because whoever we are in an organization, if we're the CEO or a team leader, or heck, if we're a parent, when our kids grow up and leave home, you know, at some stage, we are no longer going to have our hands on the controls. We're going to be taking a step back. It's inevitable. You know, as a CEO, you retire. As a team leader, you move on. It's inevitable. So leading from the jump seat is all about leading with that intention to lift other people up, to empower them so they have got what it takes to lead and carry forward those things that are really important to you, whether that's your mission, your purpose, or just your values as a family, you know? And for me, it's the highest form of leadership, because it's not about retaining or growing your own power. It's literally about empowering others. And when we do that, the whole process of it, it's not just about when we take a step back and move away. Actually, the whole process of it helps us to lead better, because it then gives us the confidence, for example, to lead when we don't know the answer, because then we have our team who can contribute to help figure out the solution.
Yeah, I get that. And I think I see myself in that as a leader, where I'm like, oh, you know, like the micromanager leaders that want to go in there. And what I heard, or just kind of the experience, is you weren't leading that person. You know, it wasn't just that moment where you decided to sit back. It's all of the training, all of the preparation, all of the steps. And then you're saying, hey, the best thing I can do right now is be quiet.
Yeah, and I think there's another point to the story as well, which is it's interesting to reflect on the sort of culture, a relationship we had, that had Callum feel that he wanted to invite me onto that flight deck. You know, it took some courage, that, because I was his senior boss. He just got rid of me, got me off his back after, you know, being checked and tested for weeks on end. So really interesting that he had the humility and the confidence to invite me back onto that flight deck. Why? Because it was in service of a higher thing. It was went beyond himself. It was for the safety of the aircraft and everybody on board. So there is a powerful lesson there as well in terms of this metaphor of leading from the jump seat, how we can create those environments where you are invited back, where people feel comfortable to do just that, because it is not always the case.
I really love that. That's so cool, because I think that that's from a CEO perspective, and I guess it's the difference between leading from purpose and leading from the nuts and bolts. If you're a leader in those positions as you've grown and you're saying, hey, you know, I'm a nuts and bolts leader, I'm like in it here, you know, it doesn't mean you're giving up something. It means that, like, for that greater purpose of organization, of leadership, that you're creating the space for that person to thrive and be successful. And in an ideal world, because I think most leaders would say, I want to create an environment where I trust my people, but they trust me enough that they don't have a problem calling me back in just to observe for the greater attainment. And it really shows that everybody's on the same page towards that same outcome.
Yeah. And I actually just pick up another point you've touched on there, Anthony. You know, if, to use your phrase, we're a nuts and bolts leader, we're getting our hands right in there. Another way of describing that is we're the go-to person. We're the person who's got the answer. But here's the thing. If you are the person who always has the answer, you actually become the constriction in the pipe. Because it trains people to go to the boss, whoever the boss is. If that's you, go to the boss. He or she will know what to do. But what if you don't know what to do? Or what if there is a better solution? You become the constriction in the pipe, and your team can only advance as quickly as your knowledge allows. However, if you become comfortable leading when you don't know the answer and see that as a strength and empower your people, you then harness the collective genius of your people to figure out the solutions to the challenges you're facing. And then you're no longer the constriction in the pipe, and your team accelerates so much more quickly.
So this is after, you know, 25 plus years of leadership experience and leading from the front. So let's go back, Peter. And we've got the time when you're a pilot, you're in there, and then you've kind of rose from the ranks into the point where you're saying, okay, well, I'm a really good pilot now. I'm going to be responsible for other pilots, other organizations. You've had some significant responsibility as you've gone and grown. What was either an area there where you failed and you were like, oh man, I'm going to learn something from this today? Or what was like an aha moment that you had along that path that really like took you to another level in terms of your leadership, communication, and ability to support others in what they are working on?
Hey, sorry to interrupt. It's Anthony here again. I just wanted to let you know, if you're enjoying today's episode, I'd love it if you could give us a review and a comment to let us know where you're listening from. It means a lot to us. It helps us with the algorithm. It also helps us get into the hands of more people so that we can keep bringing great guests onto the show. So please do that. Also, if you or your team are planning a strategic planning offsite coming up, please reach out to us. We'd be happy to see if we're a fit to facilitate, to support you and your team getting on the same page and getting clear about where you want to go. So you can visit smestrategy.net or click the link in the description. We'd appreciate both of those things. Now get us back to the episode.
So two parts to that question. Let's go with the first part initially, and that is, where did I screw up, basically? And I've described one of these occasions in the book. It's when I had the privilege of taking over, becoming the commanding officer of a squadron. Now, the squadron in the Royal Air Force, like in the Canadian Air Force and other air forces around the world, is the fighting unit of the Air Force. And it's a huge privilege. You know, the 101 Squadron was my squadron and it had been formed in 1917. I could see the names of all the previous commanding officers and all these prestigious people. You know, it felt like quite a burden. And I took over from a great guy, a chap called Ian, who was, in my eyes at least, Mr. Charisma, you know. Everybody seemed to love him. It was instant good time when you were around him. And there were some pretty big boots to fill. And my mistake, whether it was conscious or subconscious or a mix of the two, was to think, I need to be like Ian. But you know what? That's not me. And for the first 6 months, I was trying to be this person who wasn't me. And it just undermined the relationships I had with the team around me. So thankfully, I have this realization a little bit further into my time as the squadron commander, the boss, and relaxed into being back to who I truly am. And this led to I acknowledged Seth Godin here, listening to one of his podcasts a few months ago. Seth really helped me out with a notion. We talk a lot about being authentic, particularly in leadership, but I always had a little bit of an issue with that. And Seth helped me because he said, you know what? Our right to be authentic ends when we're about 9 years old. A four-year-old screaming because they're hungry or tired, that's authentic. But as you start to get a little bit older, you need to put a filter on. And that's integrity. You know, and I've been in situations, particularly leading people in combat, where was I afraid? Yeah, heck I was. Did I have great uncertainties and concerns about what's going to happen? Absolutely. But people were looking towards me for guidance to be that bedrock and to share all of my, if you like, authentic feelings would not have been in service of them. And so I acknowledge Seth for this because I think integrity, in other words, behaving with consistency that matches the role or position that you have and what people are looking towards you for in order to lead them through challenging situations. And that is really important. So that was one mistake, but something I learned from it. I'd like to answer the second part of your question as well. A big aha moment, which is this. Many of us like to think that our lives, the work that we're engaged in, has some significance. And quite often we tend to equate that with big things. You know, your introduction and me filling in a little bit about the things that I've done, they tend to be the headline things. And that's fine. But what I've discovered is that's not really what's deeply important, not at a human level. It's the little things. The little things that are important. So, for example, again, during the 2003 Iraq War, I was exceptionally busy running that deployment where we were flying unarmed aircraft, air refueling aircraft, refueling fighter jets, and we're unarmed, undefended, and we got shot at a fair amount from the ground. And it was a tough situation to lead in. But I found the time, most of my time actually, was spent connecting with my people, checking in with them. It doesn't take long. You know, just a hand on the shoulder saying, are you okay? How's your family back home? Are you getting what you need so you can do your job? It doesn't actually take much time at all. But for me, those moments were insignificant. But for the other individual, what I've discovered is that they can be hugely significant and can continue to have a positive effect on them for weeks, months, or even years to come. It's like, you know, throwing a pebble in the pond. Those ripples will go out. We never know how far they will go. But being that pebble in the pond, it's only a small pebble, but it can have a huge, huge impact. And very quickly, I'll give you an example, because this is a significant moment to me. When we landed back at base after the 2003 Iraq War, we'd been out for several months, and thankfully I brought home everybody that I took out. I was just about to drive off. You know, we'd parked the aircraft, we'd had the full reception, the TV and the news, all the rest of it. And I got my two young kids, as they were at the time, in the car. I was about to drive off, and there was a knock at the window. And it was John, one of my aircraft maintainers, technicians, had been out in the desert with me. And on one arm, he had his wife. On his other arm, or in his other arm, he had his newborn son that he'd just met for the first time. And I said, "Yes, John, what is it?" He said, "Well, sir," because that's how they addressed me in the Air Force. He said, "I'd just like to say thank you for bringing us all home safe." And even now, tell you that, I kid you not, it grabs me, because it symbolized the dedication and the sense of duty of this young guy, that he would leave his pregnant wife and, you know, go away and do his duty without question. And now I doubt for one moment he'll remember that. I'll remember it for the rest of my life. And it's a reminder to me that the smallest acts can have such deep and long-lasting repercussions. And it shows that we care. And that's one of the big things, I think, for any leader, is to show that we care. And it doesn't actually take that much time or that much effort. We just need to be intentional about it.
Mm. And I mean, one of the things I'm taking, because I was like, you know, when you look and you talk to air quotes gurus and you say, like, here's the tool, you know, here's the framework, here's the process. I talk about framework and process all the time. You actually, you care. It's part of your character. But I think that that's one of the things, if we talk about the aha in your leadership, is, you know, recognizing that those caring moments will make a lifelong difference beyond the task, beyond the job, beyond the right now. And then one of the other things I took away from that, it was just that everybody has pebbles, that like, you don't need to be up top to show that you care. You can be anywhere and it's going to like make a lasting impact beyond just trying to like get the job done.
And can I say, actually, just on this care thing, because this is not trivial. You know, I've written about this in Lean from the Jump Seat, and the three practices that I talk about becoming a jump seat leader. One is commitment, another is humble confidence, but the third is belonging. And caring is a really vital aspect of that. And the reason that it links to belonging is that as leaders, we need to nurture a sense of belonging in our teams, in our companies, because it is a human, well, driver, a human need to feel that we belong. But this isn't about, you know, lovey-dovey tree-hugging thing. It has direct business impact, because here's what happens when people feel that they belong. They start to show up. They start to take responsibility. They start to lead. They start to contribute more than they would otherwise, because they want to have this sense of belonging. And when we create the environment, we paint that picture on the jigsaw puzzle box so people can figure out how they can fit in and how they can contribute. And they feel that the people who are above them in the leadership chain, they really care. Then it generates that motivation to contribute. It's one of the toughest leadership challenges I think many of us face is being a parent. You know, it's one of the biggest challenges. My children have grown up now, but one of the challenges I pose in workshops sometimes is, right, how do you get your teenage daughter to put her dirty laundry in the basket? You know, this is a big challenge because, yeah, you can carrot and stick it, but it's not something necessarily they want to do. But change the context. Say they're going out at the weekend with their friends and they want to wear their best outfit. It needs a wash. Heck, they'll put it in the laundry basket. They might even wash it themselves. Why? Because they want to feel a sense of belonging in their group of friends. And they do that partly through what they wear. It's exactly the same, but on a bigger scale in companies and in teams. When we nurture that sense of belonging, people step up and choose to do more than they would otherwise. And then they become leaders. And that's when we don't need to be telling people what to do, because they're figuring it out for themselves.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I never actually thought about it that way. My general kind of perspective on the leadership is like a leader, you know, you need to help people get them what they want, which is something like yours. But what I pull away from that is the driver of it. And that as a leader, what I'm taking away is as you're pulling them into that, as you're helping them get to what they want, it also to me signals that you care enough as a leader to bring them into it, that like you could go fast. You could just go and go and go and go, but like you are caring enough to stop and say, hey, like I'm here for you. Like you're part of this. I can't do this without you. Not in a manipulative way, in a genuine, like, hey, you know, it's one thing to help them get what they want, but the fact that you're helping them get what they want shows that you care about them, which I think is, again, going back to that story of, I think his name was John, saying like, you cared. You cared about making sure he got back home. You cared about making sure he had a good experience as best as possible.
No, and a great example of this in action at scale is the company ASOS. ASOS is a UK-based company, but it is a global fashion retailer. Online fashion retailer. They have something like £3 billion turnover a year. They've grown over the past 21 years, and they have something like 450,000 product lines, 850 brands, and 4,000 people working in the organization to make it all happen. And they deliver to over 200 territories. The CEO for some years has been Nick Baton. He's just stepped away, but he's built the culture of that place. And what amazes me is that the average age of those 4,000 people is just 27. Only 27 years old. And when you go around their headquarters, you know, it's a creative place. You've got groups of people sitting in circles on the floor, sketching things out. But boy, it runs like a military machine. Every week, they put 5,000 new products on their website for sale. 5,000. When something is photographed in the studio in the morning, it's on sale on their website in the afternoon, available in any of 200 territories in any size you want. And the way they do this, partly, is through nurturing the sense of belonging. And each of those 4,000 people has the opportunity to step up, to lead, to contribute. And they do so because they feel that they belong. They're a part of something. It is so, so powerful.
Well, Peter, you've shown me that there's a room for improvement in my leadership in terms of belonging. I'm not going to feel bad about myself. I'm like, damn, I'm just seeing that there's potential. So I hope our listeners got the same from that, that they recognize that there is potential for their growth in leadership, and that even as a person who I believe is driven by purpose and driven by why, I now see like that there's a higher standard for myself to get to. And so thank you for that for me. And then I hope the audience feels the same way. So if you guys got something from today, which I hope you did, please let us know in the comments or reach out to Peter personally. Peter, where can people get a hold of you? Where can people learn more about your book and your work and all the cool stuff that you do?
Sure. Well, I'll send you a link where people can buy the book anywhere in the world. And you can check out my website, leadingfromthejumpseat.com. There are resources on there. And just on the book, you know, this is a how-to guide, how to lead from the jump seat. Because at the end of the day, one would hope that we're at work on something that's really important to us. So we would hope that that would continue after we've taken a step back. Leading from the jump seat is how to do it.
Awesome. Well, I'm clear that leading from the jump seat is not an activity. It's a way of life. But no way, it genuinely is just a perspective to take on life. And another takeaway I got is, you know, that sometimes sitting from the jump seat and shutting up is the best tactic that you could take in those. But Peter Docker, thank you so much for joining us today on this episode of the Strategy and Leadership Podcast. It's been a blast.
Thank you, Anthony.
Ladies and gentlemen, folks and people, my guest today, Peter Docker, who is the author of Leading from the Jump Seat, speaker, teacher, author, and really he's been a person who's just contributed immensely to my life today, and I hope he has to you. So if you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to rate it 5 stars on iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud. Send it to a friend, send it to a leader, send it to someone on your team, because I'm sure they'll benefit. So thanks for joining us on today's episode. My name is Anthony Taylor, and until next time. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. Before you go, I wanted to make sure that you knew about our signature course that'll help you better align your team and get them bought into your strategic plan.
It's presented really simply that whether you're a seasoned veteran or brand new to strategic planning, it'll help you better understand it, it'll help your team think more strategically, and it'll help you better prioritize and set goals. Ultimately, it's going to give you a plan that you can execute successfully. Because you have no idea how many plans that I see that look good, but are missing key components to make them successful. And we cover all of those missteps in the course. On top of all the video training, you'll get access to all of our workbooks and access to our knowledge base and community. The course is only $495, and you can get instant access to all of the videos. Plus, you can use the code PODCAST for $100 off. Course comes with 100% money back guarantee. If you don't get value from the course, let us know and we'll give you all of your money back. So go to smestrategy.net/course, use the code podcast for $100 off. And I'm really looking forward to the opportunity to support you and your team in getting alignment and moving your strategic plan forward. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next time.